If you're running a business right now, you're playing a game where the rules keep changing. Trade tensions, economic uncertainty, culture wars, the world is rapidly changing around us. And companies, especially independent and local businesses, are having to adapt faster than ever. That's why Mission Critical is evolving. We're diving deep with the founders, CEOs, and entrepreneurs who are navigating this chaos in real time. The ones making the tough calls, pushing through unpredictability, and proving that resilience isn't just a buzzword, it's a survival skill. How do you scale in an economy that feels like it's on shaky ground? What happens when US policy shifts send shockwaves through Canadian industries? And in a world where diversity, healthcare, and economic resilience are becoming battlegrounds, how do businesses double down instead of backing down? These are the real conversations that matter to business leaders right now. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. From a small-town jewelry shop in Alberta to the global stage of luxury retail, Chao Louis has been busy rewriting the rules of legacy one brilliant piece at a time. As a co-owner of Paris Jewelers Canada, a family-run business started by her Vietnamese immigrant family in 1987, Chao has turned heritage into a mission. With stores across the country, the brand is known not just for its sparkle, but for its story. A story that began with her mother, who didn't speak English, relying on a Vietnamese-to-English dictionary to serve her first customers. Today, that same dictionary, a symbol of perseverance, identity, and the quiet strength behind every success story, is on display in the flagship showroom of her latest brand, Selly. Now, Selly is a modern fine jewelry brand that marks the next chapter in her journey, rooted in heritage, elevated in design, and deeply personal. Where Paris Jewelers reflects her family's immigrant beginnings, Selly represents a bold step forward, a brand built from the ground up by two sisters who have turned lived experience into lasting impact. It's a reflection of Chao's growth as a founder, her desire to create something lasting on her own terms, and her vision to shape the future of luxury through storytelling, cultural pride, and craftsmanship. In this episode, we talk about building a legacy from scratch, the emotional power of jewelry to connect generations, and her game-changing new partnership as the official ring designer for the PWHL's first-ever championship rings. It's a story of grit, grace, and generational impact, told through gold, gemstones, and an unwavering belief in the beauty of where you come from. This is Mission Critical. Let's get into it. Good morning, Chao. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So I'm doing fantastic. We're in like such a beautiful, your beautiful store here on Queen West in Toronto. Iconic neighborhood. Also just like a really nice day for our standards. So we're in a good mood and I'm so glad that we can finally meet.
Yeah, me too.
You grew up, or you are based in Alberta, which is where I'm from as well. So it's kind of nice to have that little connection as well. So I wanted to talk about your journey today, your family business, the insights and kind of the your experience building the brands that you have. And also just like talking about jewelry, because how fun is that, right?
The best.
So you and your sister lead a business that really started in a small town in Alberta, and it's now a national, international success. When you think back to those early days, what was the dream then, and how has it evolved over the years?
Okay, well, starting from the beginning, our family immigrated from Vietnam to Canada when I was very young. I was 2.5, my sister was 6 months, and my mom was just trying to build a better future for our family. And so we came here, we had very little, and we saw her work really hard growing up. She didn't speak English, and she worked 2 or 3 jobs at the same time just to build a better life for us. So we saw that work ethic really early on. And then she had the opportunity to train as a goldsmith at a now competitor's jewelry store, and she became really good at it. She doesn't love when I tell this story because she could size a ring in 20 minutes. She can't do it anymore, so she's like, don't tell people that, I can't do it anymore. But then she got really good at it and then had the opportunity to open one small shop in St. Albert, Alberta, where we grew up, so a small town. I remember when you're opening a company and you're very, very new, you don't really know what you're doing, you're not well known, it's tough to get people to sell you merchandise. So we didn't have a lot of product. We had a very plain store, 400 square feet. And when she opened the door, she still didn't know how to speak English. So she bought a Vietnamese English dictionary. And every time a customer would come into the store, she pulled it out, and that's how she translated with customers. So we hold that very dear because I think that if she could overcome that and build a business in a new country, not know what she was doing, not speak the language, there's nothing like that my sister and I couldn't overcome. So that's how it started, and we kind of grew up in the mall. We would, you know, go to school, go to the food court, do our homework in the food court, and then just be around the mall and see the interactions with customers. So I would say that before we fell in love with the jewelry, we fell in love with how it made customers feel when they picked that perfect piece.
Yeah. When you think for, you know, a lot of a lot of us that have grown up with immigrant parents and just kind of like what they went through coming to Canada or just a new country in general, not knowing the language, not knowing the culture, and just kind of like what they had to go through to just even set a foundation down is pretty incredible when you think about it, because like, it's like, how do they do it? I don't understand.
How did they do it? With a lot of grit, and they didn't have an option to give up.
Maybe that was it, yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so as you said, you know, your mother immigrated from Vietnam with, you know, not even knowing the language. And, you know, today her daughters have built up an incredible jewelry empire. Mm-hmm. How often do you reflect on that generational journey?
I reflect on it all the time. Like, she really raised us to never forget where we came from. So I think about it often. I never want it to be far away from what we're doing, like at our core, and the difference that we do want to make, and we do want to make her proud. Of course, she's done a lot for us.
What are some of the lessons that or lessons or values from your mother that, you know, are still really baked into the DNA of the brands?
If you ever met her, you would see that she is just the kindest person. She's really kind. She always tells us, do all things with love. She's super giving. And she did everything with so much grace and so much gratitude. And she has a ton of grit. Like, she just never gave up. She worked super hard. And even when she didn't know, she would try. So I think that we saw that a lot growing up. And it's really instilled in the core values of the company today.
What would you say was, like, would you say that she was the same kind of business person as she was, like, a mother at home? Like, was there any kind of duality between those two, or was it pretty consistent? What was her personality like?
She was just really kind. She was very soft. I think that she trusted people. She gave people trust, and in turn, they gave that trust back. So that's something that she was like at home. She was like at work. And the relationships she's had from the very beginning, she still kept to this day.
So now tell me, you know, you've built up, you with your sister, Paris Jewelers, and now this wonderful brand in the store that we're sitting in today. Can you tell me a little bit more about Sally?
Yeah, I can. So Sally was really a dream. Honestly, we were so lucky to work in the business with our mom and learn so much. And we were co-owners at Paris. But at Sally, something really different. We're actually co-founders. And that actually, I didn't know what a difference it would make to us. But it did make a big difference, because for us, it's something that we started from the very beginning. It wasn't something that we kind of, in a sense, inherited. So really, the dream was that we would open, you know, a different company, a different brand that possibly served a different demographic. And it really had a lot to do with this area, Queen Street in Toronto. So when we were thinking of originally expanding to Toronto, originally it was going to be a Paris Jewelers. But every time I would come here and I would be on Queen Street, I fell in love with Trinity Bellwoods Park. Okay, so
just down the street.
Yes, I would sit there, have a coffee, and just kind of sit and just watch the community gather, people gather, families, friends, and everyone was really happy. And I just kind of felt a sense of home. And getting to know the customers, I really felt in our gut and in our hearts that we could open something different and really have a space that's not just about selling jewelry, but a space that people could gather, be a very exciting hub for people to come and to celebrate. That's why we have so many things that people can experience in the showroom. So it is a totally different business. And it's been very interesting and very, very fun to learn.
So what is the mindset? How does the mindset differ between your experience as a co-owner at Paris Jewelers and then being a co-founder here at Sally? How do you approach the businesses differently or not differently too?
So I think a lot of the things that we do, it's like based on experience. But in Sally, to be honest, we've had to stretch and really learn to think differently because it's such a different business. So here we have to adapt very quickly. We learn something about a customer. We really try to implement it right away. We may implement, we may fail, and then we just iterate really, really quickly. Paris is really like tried and true. We've been doing it for over 20 years, so we understand our customers. When we open a store, we're expanding. We're opening another store this year for Paris Jewelers in Calgary. And when we open it, we have systems. We know what works, and it goes really quite smooth. Here, it's like a learning. It's super exciting. But we have to approach it very differently, and I have to kind of put on different hats because it is a business that we do want to grow. We do want to grow it globally, and we just have to think so much different.
Right. Does it allow you to kind of experiment and do things that you wouldn't be able to do necessarily?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the beauties of this space is we get to test a lot. We get to try new products, try new things, hold different events, and really learn from them. And we can implement them, you know, in Paris Jewelers, or we can just take them to the next level here. So it's been really fun.
How would you say the approach to your clients and your customers between the two brands? Mm-hmm. What's their perspective on the jewelry between the two? How do they approach? What is the person that is the kind of client for Sally looking for in jewelry that might be different from mm-hmm. someone that is looking for jewelry at Paris? Mm-hmm.
So I think there's similarities and there's differences. Mm-hmm. I think at the heart of it, like, we do believe that jewelry celebrates moments in time, and like, it's just so much more than just the diamonds, the gold, the metal that it's made of. You're gonna wear it, and it's gonna remind you of that moment forever, and it's a celebration. So I think in that sense, it's very similar. I think the difference here at Sally is we're seeing that customers, especially when it comes to engagement rings or really memorable pieces, they possibly want something different, something one of a kind, and which is like we're really good at here. Mm-hmm. We can custom make, we can do one of a kind pieces. We really can make anything anybody dreams of. And our selection of engagement rings here is really, I think, what makes us stand apart.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is like the biggest kind of misconception about jewelry today? Like, what are the people confused, or are they... Or is there kind of like a narrative around jewelry that might not be really like kind of true? What's kind of, from your perspective, mm-hmm. A narrative there? Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is what I really believe about jewelry. It should be fun. You should love wearing it. There's no rules. Wear what you love. Wear what makes you feel good. So when people come in and they say, like, what are the rules about engagement rings? Should it be a diamond? Should it be a gemstone? Mm-hmm. We're always going to tell you it can be anything you want it to be.
Mm-hmm. And what's the most kind of common question that you get when it comes to, let's say, like things that are involved diamonds and like kind of stones? What's kind of the biggest question or most common question that you get?
I think the first question we're going to get asked most commonly when someone's shopping for an engagement ring is, what carat size is too big? And we're always
is too
gonna,
big.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're always going to tell you. Put it on, see how it feels, and if you love it, it's never too big.
Yeah, yeah. Is there such a thing as too big of a stone? For...
Well, if you're asking me, no.
Yeah, exactly.
I might be the wrong person to ask.
You mentioned that jewelry is kind of like, almost like a timestamp. Like mm-hmm. it's a moment in time, represents mm-hmm. a moment in time, mm-hmm. Which I think is so interesting too, like the story and like the dialogue that we can have around jewelry, because often it's something that is... can be inherited and can be passed down from mothers, grandmothers, a lot of generations before us. When I think about my grandmother, I think about the jewelry she wore, and she wore it every day. And it was one ring that was like a signet ring, but it had, I think, like a garnet and like mm-hmm. two kind of like emeralds on the side. And then she had another ring that had the birthstones of all her sons, mm-hmm. which, and she had a lot of kids. So those are the two things that I remember. And that's like so ingrained in, you know, it was bigger than just being a ring. It, mm-hmm. it represented and meant something. So when she mm-hmm. passed, it was such a special thing to be able to pass on to the family, right? Mm-hmm. How do you think jewelry really connects us, across time and, you know, especially for immigrant families too? Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's an heirloom quality to jewelry. You can wear it for years to come. You can pass it down to your kids. And there's just a story associated with every single piece. Like, I think I heard something like, somebody can look at their engagement ring a million times in their lifetime. Mm. Like, if you really think about that, mm-hmm. every time you glance down in your engagement ring, you're reminded of your journey, the story that got you here, the relationship that is, and the relationship that continues to evolve over time. Like, mm-hmm. that's really special.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there's also something very, like, poetic about jewelry being small and significant, mm-hmm. very much like the memory of, like, your mother's dictionary, too, mm-hmm. right? How do you think about, how do you think about embedding meaning into the pieces that you create?
Oh,
into
I think
the design, yeah.
I think it's everything. I think every piece is going to tell that story. I think that, you know, when you have a customer come in and they are really interested in a particular gemstone, maybe because their grandparents, it was a favorite color of their grandparents or the birthstone of their grandparents, that means something. And they're going to tell that story over and over and probably hold that moment close every time they put it on.
So what are the considerations that you have when you're designing or your team is designing each piece that keeps that in mind? Is it around the materials that you use, the design, especially, you know, for a brand like Sally, which may be a bit more like, I guess, like you have like collections and like pieces that are coming out regularly. So what considerations do you have when it comes to design?
We're always going to ask, what is most important to you? Say if you want something that's really durable, we're going to recommend, you know, a stronger metal. Say it's really important that you have a lot of bling. We're going to recommend a diamond, you know, a diamond shape that's going to get you there. Say you want something very different. We're going to recommend designs that are really one of a kind that you're not going to see everywhere. So it really comes back to the customer and what they want. We're going to keep all those things in mind because at the end of the day, what matters to them is most important.
When you think about the collections that you've designed over the year with your team through Paris or through Sally, have there been any specific pieces that were really directly inspired by your family history, your cultural background, like anything specifically that comes to mind?
So we've had a couple collections that we released during Asian Heritage Month. And for us, that's really important to honor where we came from and who we are and just really be proud of our background. So we've done a couple collections and our very first piece was our Asian Heritage Hope piece, and it had a rose quartz in it, which is the gemstone. It's inspired by like the universal love, and we donated 100% of the proceeds to charities that support anti-racism, which was really important to us. I'll always remember those. And then we designed another piece. It was a pearl bracelet because my mom loves pearls and she used to wear it growing up, and I really wanted to honor her. So we released that a few years ago.
What kind of significance or I guess symbolism does jewelry have specifically within like Vietnamese culture? Like, is if anything, like, are there certain materials or stones or designs that are more common and like symbolic of the culture overall?
I remember when I got married, I got a lot of solid gold, like high carat gold. I remember at our tea ceremony. You know, I think it's just it's a gift when you get married, and it's something that you keep and you pass on. So I have those pieces still. And they're just so special to me. So
Right. So in a way, you know, from my perspective and like kind of looking in, Sally really feels like it's reclaiming the space for like a lot of like quiet strength and a lot of cultural pride. Was that something that was intentional, and how do you express that through material, design, storytelling?
Everything in the space, we really tried to make it intentional to really honor our journey, like where we came from and where we want to go. So in the middle of Sally, as you can see, there's a harvest table. This is inspired by my mom. She always wanted people to gather with food and just be together as a family. And you're also going to see, like referencing, we have a dictionary wall in the back. And what we did at our company is we found out the languages of every single employee, and we found a dictionary, and we put them in the back to honor them. We want, when people come into our space, we want them to feel like they are seen, that, you know, there's a piece of them that is honored in our space. We want everyone to feel welcome. Also, the Sally blue is also very important. Our brand colors for Paris Jewelers is a deeper blue, and we took the Sally, the Sally blue, we scaled it back just so it was just the new chapter of the story.
Right.
So there's just those nuances and a part of the story that we want to tell through every single element of the space.
How do you toggle between kind of the mindset of legacy building with Paris Jewelers and innovation with Sally? Where do you find that balance?
Okay, I'm still learning that, to be totally honest. I'm still learning how to find that balance. It hasn't been as easy as I thought. Sometimes it's like, oh, I can just block out the time. But it's just kind of interwoven. But really, I think what has really helped is setting out the goal and saying, starting with the end in mind. What is the goal we want for Paris? What is the goal we want for Sally? Some goals are similar, and we can work towards those. If they're really different, then it needs kind of a separate space for that. But that is something that I think for any entrepreneur, to kind of switch and wear different hats, it is a part of the job for sure. And I'm just still finding that balance for it. But like every month, it's just becoming clearer and clearer, just as Sally finds like its own very unique identity in the market.
So where do you find that they are similar and where do you find that they're very different from each other?
So at the heart of it, I do find that when it comes to jewelry, people are looking for something really special, something to celebrate that moment in time, to celebrate themselves, to celebrate special occasions. So that's super similar. Our product mix is quite different as well, just because we have a different customer. And also, Sally is more experiential retail. We're going to have more events. The connections are different. Customers stay in. They linger quite a bit longer in here, which I have found has been one of the best things every time I come here. Customers will stay for hours. You get to learn so much about them and learn their story. I find that pretty cool. That a customers want to give you their time.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And especially in this day and age too, when everything's so fast and everyone's got a 5 second kind of attention span too, right?
Yeah. I was with this amazing couple yesterday and they came in and they've been shopping for engagement rings. They had just started. They weren't even thinking about it that much. I think we were the first place they stopped. I learned all about their stories with them for about like over an hour. I learned all about their story, what was important to her, all about their relationship. And they ended up purchasing an engagement ring for me. And we celebrated like just for so long. And it was just, it was so great.
And now you're a part of that, their story.
Yes.
Which is so special.
Such an honor.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people don't realize how hard it is to run a family business, let alone with your sibling, when you're running it with your mother as well. What's your working relationship like with your sister and what makes it work?
Okay. So this is a really interesting question. I do find that people ask me this a lot.
Yeah.
They ask, like, do you really get along with your sister?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and to be honest, 80% of the time we get along.
Yeah. Which is a healthy balance.
I think so.
I think that's reasonable.
I think so. Working together, going on vacations together. Now we live really close.
Yeah, yeah.
She just moved in close to me. So I'd say we have very different strengths. Like she is our finance person and she's absolutely brilliant. She's super organized. Like she's kind of the organized to my chaos. I'm the person who gets distracted a lot. I have a ton of ideas.
Yeah.
I want to do a ton of things. I'm not as mindful of budget. I would say... So we do very different things, which is really important. And then we do really try to stay in our lanes. But we have this rule that has really helped us. And once we make a decision, we just move forward together. So we may not agree, which we don't all the time. But once we make a decision, we really try to move forward together. We don't look back and place blame. If it's a decision that we make, we just really, we really have to move forward.
Yeah, yeah. And has that been helpful in terms of conflict resolution, in terms of being able to carry momentum forward as well?
Yeah, it's been really great. And we also implemented just days that we do side-by-side work days. So it's a meeting-free day. We try to do it once a quarter where we just sit side-by-side and we work. And we make decisions very quickly. We talk things through. So it's not like trying to catch someone to make a decision. We really have 8 hours together. Intentionally,
yeah.
Making those high-level decisions, talking about any conflicts that we have. So we call them side-by-side work days. So, like, you know, we start off with a lot of coffee, some carbs, and then probably, like...
Yeah, set yourself up
a lot
for
of
success.
Wine.
Yeah, a lot of wine, yes, exactly.
A lot of wine by 5 o'clock.
Yeah. What's your best advice for others that are working with their family and, like, trying to toggle personal versus professional boundaries? Because that can really kind of have a lot of back and forth between the two, and it can be hard to define those boundaries. And everyone's going to have different boundaries too, but what would you say is your best advice there?
That's a great question. Okay, so I think honestly, having a business with family, it can be the best thing and can be the most challenging thing. The best thing is that I don't really ever feel alone in the business. I know a lot of people say that owning a business, being an entrepreneur, you can feel lonely, I think, which is totally true. I just feel like someone always has my back and I'm not alone. You know, when it comes to the really hard stuff, when there's pivotal moments in the business. That being said, when you have two different perspectives, making decisions can be harder. So we have this saying in our company, we do believe in it, it's when it's written, it's real. So we do have really written, clearly defined job descriptions on who owns what in the business. So we can refer to that. Because you can have a lot of verbal conversations, but you know, the understanding from both sides could be different. And I think the advice would be is to not leave it to have that critical or crucial conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to do it quickly, you have to do it right away, because once resentment builds, it's really tough to get over it.
Yeah.
And I would say, I know it sounds really personal, but when you are, you know, you're with your family all the time, you don't want to make waves, but you have to put the business first. So we always say, nobody's bigger than the business, not me, not you, it's the business first, because the business supports a lot of people's livelihood, their families, it really signs paychecks.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally a relationship, and you kind of have to kind of be able to approach it in the same way as like a friendship, a partner, like mm-hmm. your business, because you're navigating and you're cultivating a business relationship, mm-hmm. regardless of whether or not it's with the family member too, right?
Yeah. So I think you just have to be super honest, and that sometimes that can be hard if you don't want to, you know, you don't want to upset anybody, you want to keep the peace. But I would say, to do it right away, to have that conversation right away, is so important.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Mm-hmm. Switching gears, let's talk about the PWHL. Paris Jewelers is designing the first ever championship mm-hmm. rings for what is really like a trailblazing kind of women's hockey league. How did that come about originally, and what did you love about it?
Oh, I loved everything about it. Okay, so I have two girls. Their names are Layla and Isla. They're 12 and 10, and they both play hockey. So they've been playing hockey probably since they were 5 years old, and they love the sport. And we've loved seeing how sports can shape youth, and mm-hmm. how it teaches them to be a part of a team, teaches them to lead, just teaches them to be a part of something bigger than themselves. So when we learned about the PWHL, we were super excited, of course, loving hockey. And then also we had the opportunity in 2022 to work with Emerin Smashmeyer, who's a goalie mm-hmm. for Ottawa. She
yes,
was
we
part
know
of
her,
our
yeah.
holiday campaign in 2022.
Amazing.
And we adore her.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of how I think a part of the connection came about. And we were just excited for the opportunity to work with the PWHL, of course. And when our teams connected, they had the idea that we would design the first ever championship ring.
Which is major, because it is, does it feel almost full circle in a way? Because like as like a company that was founded by immigrants, and now you're literally a part of history with not only like a sport that is so identifiable for Canadians, but also mm-hmm. a league that is across border too, right? Mm-hmm. Like what does that mean to you in terms of what it represents?
Oh, it means everything. And I feel like it's a really full circle moment for Paris Jewelers. Like, as a family that immigrated, you know, from Vietnam to Canada, we didn't come here with a lot, but we had like a heart full of dreams, and like never in our wildest dreams could we have ever imagined we'd be working with the PWHL. So it is mm-hmm. really such an honor.
What was the process like designing? Like, what was your favorite part about that whole process, and what was fun, and what does it look like?
You know what, the process was so great. We got to, you know, I got to connect with the team and really ask again what's important to them, what do they want represented, hearing about their story, and just creating a ring that had elements that really told the story.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible. It was great. It was very collaborative. They are exactly who I thought they would be. Super supportive, super collaborative, and super intentional about making a positive impact mm-hmm. for women in sports.
Mm, it's amazing. I love that. Can we see the ring maybe? I think we have it on site. So tell me about the ring here. Presented in a very beautiful box here.
Okay.
It's got electrical built into the box. Love that. So it looks nice and sparkly.
Yeah, well, you want to make a statement.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a statement.
We want to make a statement.
Yeah. So what are the details around the ring that you've incorporated here?
Yeah. So they had 18... games won mm-hmm. during the season. So there's 18 purple amethysts set in the ring, which is obviously Minnesota's color.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are 74 diamonds that honor the 74 goals scored in the regular and postseason on their way to winning the Walter Cup. And the Walter Cup is, of course, proudly at the center of the design of the ring.
That is so cool. How much does that weigh? You feel it when it's on your hand, I'm sure.
Yeah, it definitely makes a statement, and it is bold and it is beautiful.
It really is. It really is. That's super, super cool. Speaking of the Walter Cup, what does it mean for you to, you know, personally stand alongside when we talk about legacy brands, like mm-hmm. Tiffany is such a legacy brand who designed the Walter Cup as a ring partner for mm-hmm. a historic league. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you?
It means everything. As a woman, as a mom of two girls that love and play hockey,
mm-hmm.
Like, it means everything. And it just shows that the PWHL is so committed to continuing to move the story forward and continuing to empower women everywhere.
I love that. So when we talk about different design aspects of the ring, what are some of the other kind of favorite portions that you have here?
So on the inside of the ring, we engraved win one game, which is something that they always said in the locker room as a team, you know, as they were going towards the journey of winning that Walter Cup. And then we have the final score of that winning game, 3-0, also inscribed on the inside.
A bigger part of the storytelling here too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Love that.
I want them to remember the story every single time they wear the ring.
Yeah. Yeah. And then again, it's like a timestamp, right? Yeah. When we talk about storytelling, and I mean, if you think about an heirloom, that is quite the heirloom
and
the timestamp too, right? It tells a story for sure. You know, from the shop floor to the design table, the harvest table here, the studio here, you're showing, you know, really what's possible for women-led and immigrant-founded businesses in spaces that are like traditionally dominated by a lot of like legacy names too. People that are very familiar with a lot of household names. How do you hope that this inspires other immigrant entrepreneurs, other women-founded businesses and leaders in terms of carving out their own space?
Gosh, I really believe that myself, my sister, our team, we're here today because someone like believed in us and inspired us along the way, maybe 10 or 20 years ago. So I'd hope that anyone who comes into our space, we are proud of our story, we're proud of who we are, and that they understand that I do believe that you can really achieve a lot. You have to work hard. Nothing in life that's worth having is ever free or easy, but you can do it. And I just hope that people feel that they can always reach out and ask, and like we can be of a support, because I do believe that I'm only here today because somebody did that for me.
Yeah, yeah. What is the experience building up a brand and also with your family members really taught you about collaboration, especially when you think about it as well within the context of working within a sports league and a team? How does the spirit of collaboration contribute to bringing your vision to life?
Well, I think it's everything. I definitely don't believe I'm the smartest person in the room, and I should never be. I think the ideas of everyone around you is really, really important. You have to listen. I mean, like here at Selly, I really have to trust the team. I don't live in Toronto. I really have to trust the team. They know what they're doing. When they give feedback, it's because they understand, they interact with the people that come into the shop every single day, and we have to implement the things that are important. I think in terms of family, we all have a different lens in which we see the business, in which we see the world, in which we see the future. So I think it's just taking the best of that lens and just really aligning it to our goal, and that's how we move forward.
So we're having this conversation during Asian Heritage Month. What does this time of year mean to you, and how does it, you know, inform the work that you do?
It's a really important month for us. So my mom is born in May, Asian Heritage Month, and we always take a trip on her birthday to honor her. But I think we, as a company, we've come a long way in terms of sharing who we are in our story. There was a time in this business, probably, I want to say, like, if you would look back probably 10 years ago, you probably wouldn't have seen, like, our names or our faces in a lot of things, just because we used to honestly hide who we were. You know, there was an incident where when I was 18 years old, so very young, my mom thought it was a good idea for her to put me on the cover of our flyer. So you have to understand, back then there was no social media. All of our marketing was really just, we would print like a huge flyer and print millions of copies and go in newspapers. So she put me on the front of the flyer. I didn't think anything of it. I was like really young. And when that flyer got distributed, we got tons of feedback, and it was super negative. And I wasn't expecting this at such a young age. So it was like feedback that, like, people learned that we weren't like from Canada. We were immigrants. They had no idea. And it was really negative feedback. And we actually had a really bad sales season. So from that moment, at that age, I don't think that I was well equipped at that time to handle something like that. I felt super responsible for the bad sales. I felt super responsible for all this negative feedback our teams were getting in our stores. So kind of made the decision to say, okay, well, I'm not going to share who I am. I removed my any title for my signature. We wouldn't take a picture. We wouldn't show it. And we just silently built our company. And I'm not saying it was the right way. I'm just saying it was the way that we thought we had to move forward just in that space and in that time. But 12 years ago, obviously I had my baby. And I really believe in modeling the behavior that I expect. And I thought, okay, I'm hiding who I am, not sharing our history. I'm not even feeling proud of it. Mm-hmm. So that, like, she's going to grow up seeing that. Mm-hmm. And then our company, everybody that works in the business, and we're like, our company's 50% immigrants. Mm-hmm. They're going to mm-hmm. see that. Mm-hmm. And so what example am I setting? And I didn't feel quite proud of that. So in those moments, I kind of made a decision to say, you know what? Regardless of how it affects the business, we have to be proud of where we came from. Like, that's how I was raised, and share our story. So we really try to share that mm-hmm. all the time, not just in May. So we have like a quarterly kickoff call in our business with our teams across Canada. And we always start with honoring who we were and where we came from in our history.
Mm. Gosh, that is a really hard experience to go through at a young age, and yes. to have such a pointed experience
yes.
directly, directly funneled back to you, mm-hmm. And to have the weight of the business, your family, mm-hmm. even to an extent your community, like on your shoulders like that, mm-hmm. That is not an easy experience. Mm-hmm. And then also because, you know, a lot of us within Asian communities are taught not to, like, draw too much attention. Mm-hmm. I would say also immigrant communities too, like, mm-hmm. don't draw too much attention, keep your head mm-hmm. down, mm-hmm. do the work. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you do have an opportunity mm-hmm. to do something and it kind of has that kind of reaction, that is like, that's really intense.
Yeah.
What did that teach you about, what did that experience teach you? Well, I guess you've already talked about it, but I guess, like, in terms of how you want to build your business and how you want to grow, and also, like, who you want to invite into your business, mm-hmm. not just internally, but also, like, in the, mm-hmm. the clientele. Like, mm-hmm. are those the people that you want to be catering to necessarily that would have had those opinions back then, too? You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
So we're pretty open about who we are as an organization now. Mm-hmm. Like, we're 90% female. We're a very diverse company. I think over 50% of our workforce are immigrants. And what we really want is we want people to come into our company, feel very at home, be very proud of who they are, be very proud of their background. And, you know, I think about my mom, and when she came to Canada, she didn't speak the language, her education really didn't mean anything here. And it's always about creating what you would have wished you had growing up, what I would have wanted my mom to have growing up. So mm-hmm. we created a training program, and I thought, what if we created an amazing training program that regardless of if English was your first language or whichever, you could come and become a really amazing salesperson. We made it really simple, and I'm just so proud of that someone could come and it could be their first job, you know, at our company, and they could really excel mm-hmm. in supporting customers with finding jewelry pieces and be a great, great sales professional. Those are the things that we're really proud of in our organization. And, you know, when I go and visit a store and someone comes up to me and says, like, thank you for taking a chance on me, this is my first job in Canada and your training really helped me, that means everything. So I think, like, that's the legacy that we're trying to create. We're trying to create an environment and a work environment where people feel really great and they can be successful regardless mm-hmm. of where they came from.
Yeah, it's a gateway to opportunity.
Absolutely.
Especially as immigrants and newcomers to Canada. It's not just about being a good salesperson, it's mm-hmm. about just the life that you can kind of create for yourself afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's very, very meaningful. Yeah. What's one thing that you wish more people kind of understood about the power of representation, not just in media, but also in business and design, and also being intentional about visibility, because you've made the intentional decision to be visible and to be represented in your own business mm-hmm. And reflect in your own business. What do you think that, what do you wish more people understood about that conversation and that mm-hmm. dialogue and how important it is?
Mm-hmm. I think it's something that I've learned to understand, you know, in the recent years, and it's just really the power of one. Mm-hmm. It just takes one person. It just takes seeing one person, hearing the story of one person. And I think that, you know, it's a ripple effect. And say, like, if we can make a difference in just one person and they make a difference in that in another person, like, don't you think that'd be all worth it?
Mm-hmm.
And then as a mom, like, my daughters are watching me every single day. And what I do and what I show them is going to matter so much more than what I say to them.
Mm. How does the notion of courage and fear kind of manifest within your role as a business leader and being a visible business leader too, and making the intentional decisions to, be an outspoken voice for your community, for other women founders? How do those two things kind of play into that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, to be completely honest, I'm scared all the time. I always want to make the right decisions. Unfortunately, I don't. But like, I'm scared all the time. But I think that action solves everything. So even when you're scared, take a leap, take the jump, make the action. You're going to fail, just get up again. Mm-hmm. So I think that really execution is going to win every single time. Mm-hmm. But if we can't make a decision and we're just kind of stuck in a place, it is hard to move a business forward, right?
Yeah. I've also seen the brands that you lead really connecting with community, connecting mm-hmm. with other brands in mm-hmm. terms of, you know, brands that are women-owned mm-hmm. or Asian-owned. Mm-hmm. How does that, how important has that been in terms of building out a community of mm-hmm. other business owners and other people within your community been to the ultimate spirit of your business? Mm-hmm.
Gosh, it's been so important. I love working with other female brands. I always feel like we get to learn something from people who have done it before and learn a different perspective. And I also think that supporting other women in business is so important because I would have wished to have that growing up, mm-hmm. right? It's something that I would have longed for, to maybe have a voice, someone to mentor me and someone to say, hey, this is what I've done. It didn't work, or this is what I've done and it really worked. I've just loved doing it, and I think we will continue to do it in Parish Jewelers and in Selly as well.
What would you say is like your advice for other minority-owned or women-founded companies that in terms of bolstering each other up? How can we as in these communities connect with each other and really support each other better?
I think I've seen a shift of so many businesses coming together and supporting each other through collabs, through events. So I think that's been really great. You know what? I think it's just being open and just really being open, having a conversation. I think we've come a long way, and I think it's a pretty exciting time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Last question here. What does success mean? How do you define success for yourself today, and how has that definition changed over the years since you started growing the business at Parish back in the day? Mm-hmm. Parish Jewelers, I should say. Mm-hmm.
You're right. It changes all the time, don't you think? Mm-hmm. Like our definition of what success means and what we want for life, it changes. Mm-hmm. I think, and I was talking about this with the team yesterday, you know, and there's a saying, and it's like, you remember 5 years ago you prayed for what you have now? So I remember, I was thinking back 5 years ago, and the things that were really important was I wanted Parish Jewelers to be a growing company, but a very stable company, so that people can come to work and feel that, you know, we're going to continue to grow, we're going to have stability, they're always going to get a paycheck, they're always going to get a paycheck on time, we're not in the business of laying people off. Mm-hmm. That to us is really, really important. So success for me 5 years ago meant, you know, a growing business that was profitable. People felt like they were, you know, very stable and also giving back to the community. As I look now, as my kids get older, success to me today, if you're asking me today, it just means having a business that runs where people come, they feel at home, they feel like they're doing good work that's bigger than themselves. Mm-hmm. For my girls to see that. And honestly, for me to have the time to show up to all their hockey games,
that would
be success.
That's the bigger picture, right?
Is.
To
it
be
is.
There for them. Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Have your kids expressed any interest in possibly entering the world of this world of jewelry and business? Have you ever had that chat with them?
You know what? I have. I talked to them about it. But they change their minds all the time. Like one day they want to be a hockey player. The other day they want to be, you know, at Parish Jewelers or Selly.
Yeah.
The other one wanted to be at the event yesterday. She's like, I could come work at the sale. So he just changes all the time. But what I want them to see is I want them to see hard work. And mm-hmm. I want them to go after their dreams. Mm. And I want them to know that, you know, they have to work hard to get there. They have to be consistent, but they can do it.
They can do it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for our chat. I really enjoyed learning more about your story, and it's been wonderful being in the store too and seeing the work that you're doing. And yeah, it's really cool to see. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Wrap on this episode of Mission Critical. If today's conversation gave you something to think about, do me a favor. Subscribe, leave a review, and share it with someone who needs to hear it. Big ideas are meant to be shared, and the best insights only matter if they're put into action. Until next time, stay sharp, stay curious, and go and make something happen. I'm Lance Chung, and this is Mission Critical.